All right, folks, get ready for a deep dive. Today, we're going back in time, way back to 1804.
Yeah, we're dusting off the law books for this one.
I'm taking a look at a Supreme Court case that, you know, might sound kind of boring at first.
Capron v. Van Norden.
Trespass, North Carolina, you know, doesn't exactly scream legal thriller, right?
Right.
But trust me on this one. This case, it's a hidden gem.
It really is.
We're talking about a guy who won his lawsuit and then get this, appealed his own victory.
Yeah, you don't see that every day. It's a head scratcher at first glance.
It is, until you understand the principle at play. This case set a precedent that still resonates in courtrooms today.
This idea that courts, they can only exercise the power they've been specifically granted, it's fundamental.
Okay, so set the stage for us.
Yep.
Who were these guys, Capron and Van Norden, and what was this trespass all about?
Well, the details of the trespass itself, they aren't really that important in the grand scheme of things. What matters is that George Capron, our plaintiff, he sued Hadrianus Van Norden in a North Carolina federal court.
Federal court, okay.
And he won. Seems like that's it, right? Case closed.
You'd think so. But that's not where the story ends.
Not at all.
Capron, he's celebrating his win, but then he starts going through the court records. And he notices something's missing. There's no mention of whether he's from a different state than Van Norden.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Or if Van Norden's a foreigner, for that matter. Now, I'm guessing that little detail, that's actually a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Huge. That detail, it goes straight to the heart of the court's power. It's about something called diversity jurisdiction. It's one of the ways federal courts can actually hear a case.
Diversity jurisdiction, okay.
Yeah, basically, one side has to be from a different state or country than the other. It's right there in the Constitution.
So Capron, he wins. But then he realizes, hold on, the federal court might not have even had the right to hear this case.
Exactly. It's like he was playing in the wrong league.
He was in the wrong arena.
Right. He starts to worry, you know, what if this missing piece about their citizenship, what if it invalidates the whole thing?
Yeah. Imagine going through a whole trial, winning, and then poof, it's all gone.
A legal nightmare.
So Capron, realizing this, he appeals his own win to the Supreme Court. I mean, was he essentially saying, hey, I won, but you guys messed up by letting me play this game in the first place?
That's a great way to put it. And the Supreme Court, they agreed with him. They basically said, whoa, hold on. Federal courts can't just decide any old case that comes their way.
Right.
Their power is limited. It's spelled out in the Constitution. No diversity, no jurisdiction.
Wow. And that's where this seemingly simple trespass case, way back in 1804, it becomes a cornerstone of American law.
A landmark case, for sure.
But hold on, what about Van Norden? Was he just silent this whole time? Didn't he object to being in federal court?
That's what makes this case even more interesting. There's no record of Van Norden objecting at all during the trial. Seems like everybody just went along with it, assuming the federal court was the right place to be.
Even the judge didn't catch it.
Apparently not. It was truly on Capron to spot this flaw, and then to take that bold step of appealing his own win.
That's some serious legal guts right there.
It really is. It shows how seriously the Supreme Court takes this idea of jurisdiction. Their message was loud and clear. It doesn't matter if everyone's happy with the outcome. If the court didn't have the right to hear the case, it's all invalid.
They basically hit the reset button on the whole thing.
They did.
So this must have sent shockwaves through the legal world back then.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, imagine being a lawyer and suddenly realizing, wait, all these cases I've worked on, they could be vulnerable because of this jurisdictional technicality.
It's like the ground shifted beneath them.
Capron v. Van Norden, it forced everyone to pay attention to jurisdiction. It's not just some minor procedural hoop to jump through.
Right, it's fundamental.
So this one case about a trespass in North Carolina, it established a major legal principle that still impacts every federal lawsuit today.
Every single one. And that's why Capron v. Van Norden is such a landmark decision.
It might seem like an old dusty case, but its impact is still felt today.
Absolutely. And the thing is, the court in Capron, they didn't just, you know, say you need jurisdiction.
Right.
They went a step further. They actually laid out, you know, a whole framework, like a blueprint for thinking about jurisdiction. And it's had a huge impact, even to this day.
Okay, so let's break that down. What were the key elements of this jurisdictional blueprint?
Well, they really drove home this idea of limited jurisdiction. They basically said, federal courts, you're creatures of the Constitution. You only have the power that's been specifically given to you. Nothing more, nothing less.
So not like they have this endless menu of cases they could choose from. It's very specific.
That's a great way to think about it. And that leads to the second point, the affirmative burden. They said it's not enough for a plaintiff to just, you know, say diversity jurisdiction exists. They have to prove it.
So no more take my word for it in federal court. Got to show the receipts.
Exactly. You got to have the facts. Can't just waltz in and say, oh, I'm pretty sure we're good on jurisdiction. And then here's where it gets really interesting. They introduced this concept of sua sponte duty.
Sua sponte. That sounds like something straight out of a Latin textbook.
Well, it is Latin, of course. It basically means on their own initiative. What they were saying is that judges can't just sit there passively, you know, taking the party's word for it on jurisdiction.
Right.
They have their own duty, even if nobody brings it up, to make sure the court has the power to hear the case.
So even if both sides are like, yeah, we're good, federal court, let's go, the judge can still be like, hold on, are we sure about this?
Exactly. The judge becomes this gatekeeper, making sure only the right cases get through. And this leads to the fourth key point, non-waivability, meaning even if both sides agree, hey, we want this case in federal court, if those jurisdictional requirements aren't actually met, it doesn't matter.
So it's not like, you know, agreeing to watch a movie you both hate just because you already bought the tickets. You can't just consent to being in the wrong court.
Exactly. That power comes from the Constitution, not from the parties wanting to be there. Capron v. Van Norden, it draws a very clear line in the sand.
I like it. Clear boundaries, making sure everyone's playing by the rules.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got to ask about this diversity skeleton doctrine, and one of our sources mentioned it, and I'm a bit lost. Like, what is that exactly?
Oh, good question. The diversity skeleton doctrine, it flows directly from Capron, builds on this idea of the affirmative burden we talked about.
Okay.
Basically, it says it's not enough to just allege diversity jurisdiction. You got to have those facts laid out clear as day in the court record.
Yes.
Like a skeleton supporting the lawsuit itself.
So not just checking a box on a form. You need the details. The evidence.
Exactly. No shortcuts. And Capron is the reason why lawyers have to be so meticulous about this stuff. That case made it crystal clear. You can't just assume jurisdiction. You got to prove it. And it's got to be right there in black and white for everyone to see.
I can imagine that sent lawyers, you know, back then scrambling. Like, wait a minute. We got to change how we do things.
Oh, I'm sure there was a lot of that going on. But really, Capron, it had a profound impact on legal practice. It really raised the bar, forced lawyers to be a lot more rigorous.
So it wasn't just about this one trespass case. It's about a precedent that changed how every federal lawsuit is handled, even now.
Exactly. It all comes back to this core principle. The courts, they can only exercise the power they've been given. Capron helps ensure they stay in their lane, and that protects everyone involved.
Wow. It really shows how these, you know, seemingly obscure legal concepts, they can have massive real-world consequences. It's fascinating.
It is. But, you know, I'm curious about something. What about the language the court used in Capron? You know, the actual words. Was there anything, any lines that really stood out to you?
Yeah, there were a couple that really jumped out at me. One was, the consent of parties could not give jurisdiction.
Oh, yeah, that one's a classic. It really sums it all up, you know?
It really does. Makes it clear. Jurisdiction isn't just some minor procedural thing you can just skip over. It's the foundation of the court's power.
Right. It doesn't matter if everyone's holding hands, skipping into the courtroom. If the court doesn't have the power, it doesn't have the power. The parties can't just decide to create jurisdiction out of thin air.
Exactly. Like trying to, I don't know, hold a trial in a coffee shop. Even if both sides agree to it, it's not a real courtroom. It doesn't work that way.
Perfect example. That's basically what the court was saying. You can't just bypass the rules. It's like holding court in a coffee shop. It just doesn't fly.
Exactly. There was another quote that stuck with me. It said, a man may reverse a judgment for error of the court, though it be for his advantage.
That's a good one. That gets at Capron's cleverness. He understood winning in the wrong court. It's not really winning, is it? It's almost better to start over in the right place than risk having the whole thing fall apart later.
He was thinking long term. Knew a victory built on shaky ground, it could crumble at any moment.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court saw that. They understood why Capron appealed, even though he'd won. It was about protecting the system, the integrity of the judicial process, even if it meant undoing a good outcome.
Wow. It's amazing to think this case from 1804, it's still so relevant today. But I guess when you're talking about these fundamental legal principles, well, they stick around. They matter.
They do. Capron v. Van Norden, it laid down a principle about the limits on judicial power that's just as important now as it was back then.
So taking a step back, What does this case tell us about the balance of power between, you know, the courts and the people?
It shows that even the Supreme Court, the top of the legal pyramid, they're bound by the Constitution. They can't just act however they want. Their power is limited. And those limitations, they protect us.
It's that checks and balances thing, right?
Mm.
No single part of the government has absolute power.
Exactly. Capron v. Van Norden, it's a great illustration of that. It's a case everyone should know, really. Lawyers, even just everyday citizens.
Well said. There you have it, folks. The story of a guy who won and then kind of lost, all in the name of making sure the courts were playing by the rules. A simple trespass case that ended up shaping the legal landscape.
Yeah, it's proof that even the most technical-sounding legal stuff can have a huge impact on our lives.
That's the truth. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into legal history. We'll catch you next time for another fascinating exploration of the law.